If you'd like to support Gone Cold Podcast, Texas True Crime, you can do so by visiting patreon.com/gonecoldpodcast. There are several different tiers available, with perks to go along with each, including an exclusive series available only on Patreon. Each episode will feature a different individual who has committed murder in the state of Texas. We'll outline their crime or crimes and let the listeners decide if they are responsible for others. We sincerely appreciate all donations as they help cover the costs associated with research and production. Thanks, y'all. We'd also like to ask that you stick around until the end of the episode for a promo of our good friends and fellow Texans podcast, Secret Transmission. Now on to the show.
The Gone Cold Podcast may contain violent or graphic subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
We had a speaker, a police officer, speaking on the subject of how women can protect themselves. And Carla and I sat there. I mean, we did listen to him, but we were kind of joking and laughing like, yeah, you know, really wasn't taking it very seriously. I thought that was kind of interesting, too, that that had happened right before this had happened to her.
We've often used the term young woman to describe Carla Jan Walker, and it's fitting. She was strong, thriving, precocious, and motivated. It would be careless and misrepresentative, however, to let that description define the point of life at which she was at when it was maliciously taken from her and her family and loved ones. Carla had turned 17 years old less than a month before her 1974 death. She was a teenager, an adolescent, a child, as our society defines the term by law. Carla was a beloved daughter and sister, a treasured friend, and an adored girlfriend. Over the course of this podcast, of Carla's story, many loved ones have recounted the impact that Carla had on their lives and the devastating heartache that her murder wreaked, particularly considering that the madman, the monster who perpetrated the vicious and reprehensible act, has never faced justice, at least not for this crime. So, who is responsible? Since most violent crimes against women are perpetrated by a male close to them, Rodney McCoy was considered a person of interest immediately, as per standard procedure, but was quickly ruled out. When DNA science started becoming a standard in law enforcement investigation, years after Carla's death, in the mid-1990s, Rodney was asked for a sample. He complied and was cleared. Though Detective John Terrell collected an impressive amount of circumstantial evidence against William Ted Wilhoit and Carla's murder, it was suggested by Fort Worth Police Sergeant J.D. Thornton that his DNA was not a match with the material found on Carla. Tommy Ray Neeland, who'd been arrested for an attempted kidnapping in which he absurdly bungled, had previously committed savage and heinous crimes. The nature of Neeland's perpetrations was so depraved that they didn't resemble the attack against Carla and Rodney at all, let alone her murder. Our friend Kathleen Barnett was able to confirm fairly recently that Neeland's DNA was also not a match. So who was it? It seems likely that the individual responsible for the abduction and murder of Carla Walker is an individual who isn't necessarily known to the public at large or even those familiar with the case. When considering law enforcement statistics and data, the possibilities seem overwhelming. The sheer number of violent sexual assaults and homicide around the United States in the 1970s and 1980s was staggering. In 1974, the FBI estimated that a sexual assault occurred every 11 seconds. Fort Worth, Texas had an abundance of rapes and murders then, too. The same year, there were 67 murders and 136 rapes in the city of Fort Worth, and Peter Smith Hospital ER alone performed 10 rape examinations. A low number, to be sure, that doesn't even begin to cover the actuality of what was seemingly a sickening societal epidemic. Local law enforcement called rape the most underreported crime in 1974 due to fear and embarrassment, including the fear of reprisal from the rapist, public shame and accusations of provocation, or being accused of being a scorned active participant. Also in 1974, Texas Christian University sociology professor Francis King created the Tarrant County Task Force on Rape, which worked with and educated law enforcement on everything from rape cases and trials to providing rape crisis counseling and women's self-defense classes. In 2016, rape remains the most underreported crime, with 91% of assaults unreported to police. We've become aware of many violent sexual assaults against women since beginning our research into Carla's case, some of which the perpetrators hold records for offenses in the 1970s, and some that were potentially offending during the time as well. When we look past Wilhoit and Neeland, two persons of interest who were investigated and scrutinized possibly the most, and we look past the possibility of Carla's school peers being involved, at least in the assault against the couple and Carla's actual abduction, as Rodney is adamant that neither he or Carla knew the abductor. If we step out of the box that this investigation has been neatly tucked away in, perhaps pertinent information can come to light. To do this, though, we need to shift our focus and change the course of Carla's case, a course that was also created by speculation that never bore fruit. We need to start looking at other possibilities of who her abductor could have been. We believe, as does everyone close to this case, that it was someone who was very familiar with the area, someone who hung out at the local establishments, someone who had a history of violence or rape. Given the nature of this brutal act, it is highly doubtful that this was his first or last crime. It is possible that this attacker had a criminal history that includes rape, assault, drugs, kidnapping, or any combination. When Carla was taken, so many people were out searching, investigating, and asking questions. We need this again, particularly now, while memories can still be sparked and examined. Also, technological advances have recently been responsible for several arrests in decades-old cold cases, some older than Carla's. Though many of us feel helpless in aiding Carla's and other cases, simply uploading your DNA profile into GEDmatch, a genealogy resource and database, might help provide law enforcement with a lead that can aid them in cold case DNA comparisons. We'd very much like to see as many individuals as possible with ties to the Fort Worth area utilize this. Carla Walker, the Walker family, Rodney, everyone who's ever loved or was touched by this remarkable young woman deserves justice. We talked to one individual who Carla affected immeasurably, and we'd like to share both memories of Carla's murder and, more importantly, her memories of Carla as a friend. She was Carla's closest friend at her untimely death. Besides the unavoidable eerie details of some seemingly foreboding circumstances that we came across, such as the police officer who showed Carla's tennis class, the women's self-defense film 2 days prior to the abduction, and the police officer at the dance who told Rodney to be careful and take care of Carla just hours before, there are a couple of accounts that her dear friend shared with us.
On the weekends, Carla would, one night she would be with Rodney, her boyfriend, and one night she would choose to be with the girls or just me, and we would, you know, drive around and go to different places. And so it was a couple of weekends before she had gone, and I don't know if it was a Friday or Saturday night, which night I was with her, and we were driving around, and she knew that I had been baptized several months before. And so she asked me how I felt about being baptized. Did I think that she had to be baptized before she could go to heaven? And my interpretation at that time was that I told her, no, Carla, that's, you know, between you and your Savior and God. And if you've asked him to come into your life, then you will go to heaven. You know, being baptized at that time to me meant that she did that so that other people would know that she had asked God to come into her life. And so she said, oh, that makes me so happy because whenever I die, I want to go to heaven, you know, and I haven't been baptized yet. And of course, I didn't think anything about that because you think you're here forever, you know, and as young as we were and stuff. So But I thought that was kind of interesting. I never forgot that conversation. I can remember exactly where we were, and she was driving. And then Friday, before this happened on, I think she said late Saturday night or Sunday morning time-wise. But anyway, it was a Friday before, and it was a school day, and we had our first period class was PE, and we had it together. And she came in that day and said that she just kind of felt nervous inside. She had felt like something was about to happen. She thought maybe the reason she felt that way was because she had gone to her brother, who is married at that time, and her sister-in-law. They were having dinner or party or something there, and her sister-in-law, the sliding glass door was closed, and her sister-in-law didn't know, and so she was walking, and her hand went through the glass door or something, and it, she said it was just kind of eerie, you know, because she was bleeding and stuff like that. So she said, maybe that's why I feel kind of nervous. Well, then we went into class, into the gym, and we had a speaker that day, a police officer speaking on the subject of how girls and women can protect themselves. And Carla and I, it was a fairly small class. It was a tennis class. And so we just kind of sat there. I mean, we did listen to him, but we were kind of joking and laughing like, yeah, you know, really wasn't taking it very seriously, but we did listen. And so I thought that was kind of interesting too, that that had happened just right before the next day, this or evening, night, this had happened to her. And I can't remember how I knew this, if her dad had told me this or Carla had told me this, but we had had a friend that was killed in a car accident. It was a guy several months before, and we had gone to, a lot of us had gone to the funeral, and she'd gone to the funeral. And on the way home from the funeral, she told her dad exactly where she wanted to be buried, what kind of flowers she wanted. And so it was kind of like, I don't know, I mean, was she being prepared to where she, you know, would go on to another life? So anyway, that's always kind of stayed with me. And I know that she is in a better place as far as, you know, she, her faith was strong, in other words. We sure didn't miss her and we wanted her here, but she's in a good place. Sometimes I still get emotional about this.
But most of what Carla's best friend had to offer us consisted of happy memories that were strikingly emotional accounts of the life that was lost. The recollections shared here provide great insight into Carla's personality and teenage life.
Being friends with her since third grade, and I mean, we were really close third grade to about sixth grade, seventh grade, and then about eighth or ninth grade kind of slipped away. Our friendship did for a little bit, but then it came back stronger than ever, you know, about the end of ninth grade, first part of 10th grade. And until she passed away, we were very, very close. And Carla was full of energy, pretty headstrong. In her own way, she was kind of private. I mean, she had lots of friends, but she wasn't open to everyone and telling them everything. She was, in some ways, kind of was better with one or two best friends at the time and confiding in them, but she still had lots of friends. Everyone, she was funny, loved to be around her. Her whole family was just fun. Family was real important to her. And, you know, she had lots of siblings, and I was just from a family of two, so it was always, I loved the stories and stuff. And she was definitely very close to her dad, especially. She could work him really well, and Mr. Walker would do anything for her and get whatever she wanted. She had some way of manipulating him to do whatever, but it was a healthy way. She wasn't sneaky or, you know, vindictive. She just knew what she wanted, and, you know, and that's how she did with everything. When she liked Rodney, she really liked Rodney, and that was going to be her boyfriend, and it happened. So she was fun. People loved her, but she wasn't open just with everybody about, you know, private stuff. She did like having one or two very close friends. I could trust her. You know, she was just a great friend. We did a lot of fun things for flower parties, and I would have a slumber party about once a month, and we would have anywhere from 13 to 24, 25 girls for the night. And Carla always came to those, and she was always one that would stay up and, you know, put us through the night and just really fun. And we would get out and go TPing and do some of those things. And one time we did get caught TPing and taking for sale signs out of a bunch of new homes and, you know, switching them around and that kind of stuff. So the police kind of had fun with us that night. It was the Denver police, and they took us in to the police station and then called my dad and told him that he would have to come get us, and a couple of the girls could come and get their purses with their driver's license in it, because not everyone had, you know, not everyone was 16 at that time. But Carla was always right in the middle of that, and fun, so much fun. I would spend the night at her house some, and there was another friend that she would spend the night at her slumber parties. But the funny thing about Carla was, other slumber parties that she would come to, she never would end up staying through the night. You know, she would call her dad. It didn't matter if it was 10 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the morning, and he would come pick her up and take her home. She was kind of a homebody as far as that goes. She liked being in her own bed and being with her family. But if it was at my house or my other friend's house, she would spend the night through the whole night at our house. And that was just, there were some good times at the slumber parties. And I had told you earlier about, you know, our friendship had gone all the way back to third grade. She was kind of the teacher's pet, and that wasn't unusual, too. Teachers liked her just as well as the kids did. So in third grade, I remember our teacher. I remember out of the girls, Carla was, you know, kind of the teacher's pet in that class. But we had matching outfits with another friend of ours, and we would call each other and say, hey, let's wear our go-go boots and our blue jumpers tomorrow, you know, and we'd show up and we'd be matching, and we thought we were really cool, you know. So our friendship started really strong in third grade, and then because of our friendship, our parents also became good friends. And so whenever Carla was taken from us, my parents were pretty involved with kind of helping the walkers through that time and talking with different detectives and people that were working on the case. You know, I did take a family trip with them one time to Big Springs, and that was a fun weekend, you know, getting to meet her extended family. I mean, I knew her sister really well and her younger brother, but he was just that much younger than us, but it was kind of, at that time, we felt, you know, a pain to it sometimes. But, and her sister's boyfriend at that time, real close to them. Her brothers were quite a bit older, so I knew them, but never real well, you know. Spent a lot of time with their family. Loved them. Christmas was a big thing at their house. Oh my gosh. Mr. Walter, her dad, did all the shopping, and he started like in October, you know, shopping, and they would have gifts that covered the whole den all the way up to the ceiling, and it was just crazy. And then, like, Carla's boyfriend, Rodney, I mean, they took him in just as part of the family. They were real good about that, of making their boyfriends or their good friends just feel a real part of the family. And so, and we could call her dad if we were spending the night at my house, or if we were at her house, we could call her dad. And there was a restaurant, Kip's, and they had real good hot fudge sundaes that Carla loved. And so we could call her dad, and he'd drive us by our boyfriend's houses at that time and honk the horn and then take us to Kip's to get a hot fudge sundae, you know. And that could be 10 o'clock at night, that could be 12 o'clock at night. He was always at her beck and call, and, you know, those were good memories with her, too. Whew. That was something else we used to do. And I guess we started it in junior high, and we kind of did it through high school. Every Christmas, we would go and see Santa Claus and sit on his lap and have our picture made. We do that every year. So that was something that we used to do together that was fun and good memory. And we got really, our friendship really, really close, I would say, the last 6 months before she was, you know, taken from us. We were really, really close, and just spent, I'm so thankful for the time that we spent together and the conversations we'd have on the phone and you know, talking about her planning to, she and Rodney wanted to go to the same college. They wanted to go to Tech, if I remember right. And he had given her a promise ring, and she really thought that was going to be the one. And he was as crazy about her as she was about. Anyway, that's, I'm thankful for the time that we had together. It was just too short, but I promise I have felt her presence through my whole life, you know, going to graduating, going to college, getting married, you know, having children. I have always felt her presence, and I really do mean that. I know that she has been a part of my life, even though she's not here on earth. You know, I mean, I tell people that I work with something that come, I mean, it's not like I go and tell everybody, you know, what happened in my life, but she comes up a lot in my life, you know, just certain things that will happen. And I'll say, oh, yes, one of my best friends, you know, was taken from me, you know, or not me, but taken from us. And I mean, I feel the pain still. It's just something that certain times when I talk about it, even with my own daughters or, you know, friends, sometimes when we talk about it, we still get upset about it. And certain times when I think about it, it's more painful. And I'm over the anger part of it. And I think, I don't know, you know, her Jimmy and Cindy may still have, I don't feel as angry as I did for a long, long time, but the emotional part is still there. I want her to always be remembered, and I think about her all the time. When Carla passed away, her parents gave us all this last picture that they had for her, you know, that a photographer had taken. It was one, I know you have that, because it was one that was showed all the time, you know, when she was kidnapped. And they gave us all that in a frame. And I kept that in my room forever. Even after I went off to college, those pictures were up in my room. Always had her with me. Well, it's really funny how people that I've met over the years, they might have grown up in Fort Worth or around Fort Worth. And if they're around my age or older, didn't know them then. They didn't know Carla, didn't know them. But they all knew the story, you know.
Though we have come to the end of a consecutive series of episodes on Carla Walker and her story, we are by no means finished with her case. Any and all new information collected or brought to our attention will render new episodes on the case, and we look forward to shedding additional light and coming closer to justice for Carla. If you have any information about the abduction and murder of Carla Walker, please contact Fort Worth Police Department Cold Case Unit at 817-392-4307. Next time on Gone Cold Podcast, we will begin looking into the cases that the press dubbed the February Slayings. These cases, some believed, shared similarities to the Carla Walker case and occurred over a period of several years before and after, all in the month of February. We'd like to thank Kathleen Barnett and Connie Carnes for their contributions to this episode. As always, a huge thank you to the Walker family for their unwavering and continued support. You can subscribe to Gone Cold Podcast on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, or virtually anywhere else you listen to podcasts. We can be contacted on Facebook or Twitter by using @GoneColdPodcast. We have a closed Facebook discussion group where we exchange ideas about the cases we cover and post pictures, so please join in. If you would like to support the show, you can do so by subscribing, leaving us a rating and review on iTunes, sharing Carla's story with a friend, or stopping by our Patreon page and making a small donation. And finally, if you enjoy true crime, please check out thetruecrimefiles.com. The True Crime Files presents interesting and well-written cases, and there are plenty there. They never disappoint. Thanks for listening, y'all.
This is the Secret Transmission Podcast. We are a podcast about the strange and unusual, the secret and the conspiracies, the fringe and the supernatural. We're a podcast that talks about weird things like number stations, the Bermuda Triangle, the Salem Witch Trials, time travel, the moon landing, the Zika virus, serial killers, cults, the deep web, UFOs, superstitions. We cover it all. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, and Google Play. You can also follow us on Twitter, at Secret Transpod, at SecretTransPod. Come listen to us try to explain the unexplainable.